We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses. There is so much information out there tailored towards service providers, so we have carved out a space just for you. The creative entrepreneurs making and selling physical goods. We're firm believers that everyone has a story to share, and there is so much we can learn from each other's business journey. Whether you are just starting out or a seasoned business owner, this podcast will shed light on new strategies, inspiration, and action steps to help you grow your product-based business. Hey friends, I'm Katie Hunt and welcome to Proof to Product. Today on the show, I have my friend Natalie Gingrich from the Ops Authority. Natalie has been in operations for 2 decades, including the healthcare industry, corporate America, and as an entrepreneur. Her goal is to bridge the gap and overwhelm that comes from things like processes and systems, growing a team, and really setting up those business foundations that all of us need to be focused on in our business. Natalie created a certification program for those wanting to become a director of operations, and she supported dozens of online business owners with their business operations, offering them support and strategy within their businesses. Now, on today's episode, we are diving deep into hiring strategies, including signs that it's time for you to hire, how you can create a very clear job description, why your application is really a key component in finding the right people for the job, and how to measure the value that your team members add to your business. Now, again, this episode is packed full of great info, so grab a notebook to take notes and be sure to download Natalie's free hiring guide that we will link here in the show notes. Enjoy. Hey, Natalie, welcome to the show.
Hello, Miss Katie.
Thank you so much for joining me. I'm excited to talk to you today about a very important topic, hiring for our small businesses. So I have a question to start you off with. How did you know that you personally were ready to hire your first team member within your business?
Too many hours, taking my focus away from my family, which is my biggest, that's the reason I'm doing this, right? Or that's the reason at least that I started it. So too many hours, I was just working too much and working too much, taking myself away from the things that really matter. And so I had to take a hard look and say what kind of financial commitment is it going to take for me to get some of this off my plate?
Yeah, I think that's common. I felt the same way. I hit a wall and I was like, I'm doing too much. I'm spreading myself too thin. I don't feel like I'm doing anything well. What other pain points or indicators are you seeing within a business that kind of indicate to the founder or CEO that it's time to start hiring within the business?
So of course, time is always going to be one of the biggest indicators, the easiest indicator. But once you start digging into understanding, like you've made up your mind, I can't continue like this. When you dig a little bit deeper from that, it's the competency. So when we start our businesses, we're doing all the things and we are a Jill of all trades and we have to bootstrap. I'll just use the word bootstrapping, but that's what we do at the very beginning. And it's what allows us to have really good margins, right? So after a while, you're okay trading money for that time and that space. But at the same time, you start to look at yourself and say, what am I doing the marketing for? I'm not even that good at it. Or, is it the product development or what part of this? Why am I spending 3 hours a month looking at these finances and, separating expenses and all of that? So I think you have to do a quick assessment of yourself and where are you competent and where are you not? And depending on the value of those, it may give you a really strong, fast indication of where to invest the profits that you're having. Because at the end of the day, anytime you're hiring, and the reason I'm so passionate about it is anytime you're hiring, you are taking away from the profits that your family, in my case, my family would be getting. And so by thinking about it like that, it really makes me stop and slow down and make a really methodical selection versus just running into things. My biggest pet peeve, I save every single one of them. I just did it last night. But when people throw up a job posting, like an informal, hey, I need help. I'm running this project. Do you guys know of a project manager that can help me with this? I need them to start on Monday. It's a massive pet peeve because you're not like desperate always gets desperate.
Right. Well, there's so many issues with that example. It's a vague description. There's no detail as to what expertise or specialty they need. Like you said, the desperation or like last minute, help me. Like that's not going to breed good decision-making and good hiring practices and all of the things. The act of delegating or outsourcing can be a real struggle for business owners, because as you said, they like have been bootstrapping it forever. And it's like, okay, well, what do I outsource now? Or there's also that control component, right? So like, What would you say, or what should people be thinking about when they're deciding what to keep on their plate and continue to DIY versus what they should hire out? We talked about competency. We talked about time. What else should they be considering?
For sure, their skill sets, right? But then the other things, if I'm coaching somebody on what to keep and what to give away, I'm looking at the things that only I can do. Like, I'm going to replace myself in any aspect that I'm not 100% competent in, but in the high value things. So if it's doing a speaking gig or something like that, obviously I can't get rid of that. And that's where the biggest value for me comes. And so holding on to those things, in most CEOs' cases, it's creating content, it's creating relationships, and it's actually selling or creating the product in your case. So those are things that are almost always exclusive to you. Now, you can get systems and people behind those three things to have, you know, to make better systems and operationalize those things. But you being the face of those things, those are the last things. And maybe you never get rid of those three areas. So outside of those areas, I'm always looking for, you know, that's why administrative help is so easy to get to, because those things, those activities are things that can be done by so many different people, and people love doing that. And so why would we hold on to inbox management, podcast management, a lot of those things that don't require you? Somebody else can do them and will love to do them for a fairly decent, you know, entry-level wage.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think too, once you start, at least in my case, once I started delegating certain aspects of my business, I could not stop. Like, it was one of these things of, I kept, okay, well, what more? What more do I personally not need to have my hands on that somebody else could do? And they will do it better because, as you said, they have the expertise or the, you know, experience. Okay. We mentioned this in your example of the Facebook post, but like getting crystal clear on what your needs are before you start hiring is critical. It's a critical piece to this whole thing. Some of my coaching clients right now are in this state where they have some team members, but their business is changing and their needs of what they need their team to be working on is changing. And I see a lot of them trying to fit those same people that have been on their team into these new types of roles. But those people, I kind of go back and forth with them of like, let's take the people out of this and let's get crystal clear on what your needs are, because those people may not have the skills or the talents or the interest in doing this new job that's popping up, right? So what types of exercises or questions do you work with your clients to figure out how to get crystal clear on what their needs are?
This sounds so mundane and it's not fun to do, but it is absolutely critical. If someone comes to me and is like, I'm at the place where they're ready to hire, but they don't know what to hire for, they're basically time strapped at this point. I'm like, sit down and monitor, record everything that you do over the next 3 days. Like, this is not a new Natalie concept. This is something that we've been hearing for years and years and years. But I bet most of the people that have this in their ears right now have not done this exercise.
Or haven't done it in a while, too. That's
right. Right. It is so telling of what is on your plate right now, because we are so used to doing so many things and being so fast and proficient and just taking the tasks for granted that once you do this, and here's my trick. If you're here, you're ready to do this, get your handy dandy iPhone and set that hourly timer and then just keep hitting repeat. And every time it goes off, I've got a spreadsheet or something next, however it is that you're going to capture all of this. But every hour on the hour, write all the things that you did, because if you wait till the end of the day, like we've all done the nutrition assessments, right? If that Snickers gets lost really, really easily, if I wait till the end of the day. So I encourage you to just block, you know, use your iPhone or use a timer of some sort. And every single hour, think of everything that you did. And now you're going to see from that, you're going to see how long it takes you to do these things. And then the types of tasks that you're doing. At the end of doing that, I like you to go back and see, what's the pattern of task? How much time did you actually spend on administrative activities in the last 3 days or the last 5 days? By the way, if you can do this for 5 days, it will radically transform the job description. If you do it for 3 days, that's like bare minimum. Underneath that, you're not getting enough of a variance of what you actually tackle in a week, because we do so many things, but some of them don't pop up on a daily basis. So another pro tip, go out for 5 days. If you're already doing it for three, there's no problem with doing it with five. But at the end of that, you're really able to look at this and say, what am I doing because I have to do it? What am I doing that actually increases value in this organization? And then what am I not proficient at? I love to start with what I'm not proficient at, And I rate all of these things. What am I good at? What am I not good at? And then I kind of make a rubric. It doesn't have to be this fancy. I know that these are fancy terms, but just by looking at that, when you start to say, this is what, even if you just do it quick, I want to do this and I don't want to do this moving forward, you've got the tasks written down. So now you can create a real job description. The biggest problem is people do not take the time to assess what it is that they're doing every day. So they are incapable of creating a true job description with the real life picture of what it's going to feel like and look like to work in this business. If you do that from a hypothetical state, it always leads to turnover because the person that's going to be joining you is going to be frustrated that, hey, oh my goodness, you know, so-and-so has hired me and now I'm doing this, that, and the other. And we see these fallouts every single day in the virtual space. And it all comes back to that job description and really looking at this like a real project in your business. It's not meant to be a short-term project.
No, because that job description sets the expectations. It says whoever you're hiring, they know exactly what they need to be tackling. They know how many hours they're supposed to be working. They have a clear understanding of how they're going to be helping you in the business. And you, conversely, you have a clear expectation of what you want from them. So no, I 100% agree with you. I've seen it in myself. I've seen it in clients where I did not have that clear job description or a clear understanding of what the role would entail. I felt like I was floundering and I felt like they were floundering and it didn't do either of us well. So
yeah, if I can tell on myself too, honestly, I've done the assessments where I have tracked, here's what I'm doing here's what I have done for the last 5 days, but I didn't track how long it took me to do those tasks. And so when it came time for me to hire, I was guesstimating on the number of hours. So a lot of us are going to be hiring fractional help, which is contractors short 5 to 10 hours a week or a month, right? And so these people are juggling many businesses. But if I have the expectation that they're going to be in my business for 5 hours a week, and then at the end of the month, it's like, oh, I only gave them 7 hours for the entire month, it just creates strife, right? Now I am inadvertently affecting their expectations for what they need to provide for their families. And so I try to look at this in a much slower, methodical way so that I'm protected. But at the same time, the person on the other end wants to be here. They have quality work to be doing and they're doing the work that lights them up.
Yep. Absolutely. Okay. So we've got our job description. We've acknowledged the fact that we want to hire. How do we find the right people for the job?
Oh, this is a good one. So start with that job description. And when you're looking at that job description, here's another thing that happens incorrectly all the time. If you're interested in this job, email me at katie@proof2product.com and put this in the subject line, attach your resume. Okay. Pro tip number two, ain't nobody got a resume today. Okay. We are living in a digital age. Resumes are not the way that you're actually going to validate what and who they are. It's just not a good way to do this anymore. Okay. Especially for the roles that we're looking for. I want you to take the time, based off that job description, create a real application. It literally can be, I usually say that the application is as detailed as the job that you're hiring for. So if you're looking for someone to come into your business part-time, it's going to be pretty lengthy. If you're looking for someone to come in for a short amount of time, or, you know, 5, 10, 20 hours a month, then it doesn't need to be super extensive. I want you to ask questions that match your values and try to tease those values out of them. So if being prompt is one of the things that's really, really important to you, you need to create some type of question to where you can get that response from them and be able to assess that yourself. So I will do some long form questions. I will always validate that they actually went to my site. And I won't say, did you go to my site? Check yes or no. I will ask them a question on my site. And it's not so, you know, it's not super picky, but it basically tells me, did they look at this or not? Just this morning, I'm hiring for a role. And when I get these people on the call, I always ask them, so tell me about the offerings. What kind of offerings does Katie have available? That tells me so much, and research is everything. But on the application itself, give a variety of different questions. The number one thing I love to do that makes hiring the right person easiest for anyone to be able to do is if you've done the job description, you know exactly the skill sets that you need. Maybe it's project management, maybe it's copywriting, maybe it's attention to detail, whatever it may be for you and in the role you're hiring for, let them assess themselves on a scale of 1 to 5. How well do you feel like you do these things?
I love that.
It is amazing how many people come back to me with a 2 on communication.
Oh, wow.
So why in God's green earth am I going to hire somebody that rates themselves under meets expectations? People volunteer that all the time. So it allows me to have a data. By having the application, I've got a database, I've got a form where all data is in one singular place, and I can sort through this really quickly.
That's fascinating. Okay, I have a question that might be a little off the cuff, and I don't know if you have opinions on it, but when I was hiring for one of my positions, I wasn't quite sure what the salary range was going to be. It was an independent contractor role, maybe 10 hours a week type of situation. So I put in the application, what is your desired salary, to let them kind of tell me what they were looking for. Because again, I don't want to waste anyone's time if I'm looking to spend $20 an hour and they're looking for $100 an hour or whatever, you know. What are your thoughts on that? Like, do you think it's better to put, like, to just decide on what you're willing to pay and put that in the job description? Or do you think it's okay to kind of let them tell you what they want to get paid?
More times than not, I'm going to suggest that you put the price that you are willing to pay in there, just because the data is going to be cleaner. It's going to take you less time to filter. But on the other side, anytime we're working with a client to get, you know, in a hiring project, I want them to look at their finances first, because the last thing I want you to be is in a situation where you're overpaying for a role. And it just leads you to second guess. Why did I do this? I don't really need this. And I know it takes so much mental energy to even get into the space where you're ready to hire, that if you don't give yourself those guardrails, you tend to make an emotional decision on somebody who you think is going to be the best for the job, when in fact, that may not even be the case. If you only can afford $20 an hour, then we need to make sure that you're putting out a job that is a $20 per hour role. I'm never going to work with somebody and advise them to hire $20 for a $40 role. Like, I'm going to be honest and say, you know what, Katie, you're going to have to keep this, this, and this task, because that's a higher level role. And by working with somebody to really look at this, or even a friend to help you really make sure that this description matches the title and matches the pay
and all of it. Yeah.
Super smart to do that. But I really do believe that you can be talked into buying somebody at a much higher rate than you truly feel comfortable. And that's going to lead to a lot of emotional issues in the relationship.
I also found personally, I found myself being swayed by what they put in the numbers, because it was like, oh, does that mean they're more skilled because they're charging a higher amount, when that wasn't necessarily the case? And yeah, I think I backpedaled a bit and then said, okay, this is what I knew what my budget was for the role, and I knew kind of the range that I wanted, but I did want to see what people were asking for to make sure that I was correct in my research. But yeah, that's fascinating.
And we're human. Like, if somebody comes in at $5 more than you wanted to spend, then we start justifying how we can do this, right? Like, how many of us have said, oh, we can afford this if we just get rid of one Starbucks a week, right? Like,
right.
It's super easy to do that. We're human. That's how we protect ourselves. And so I feel like if you do have a budget, start with actually putting that number in there. The only reason I would tell somebody or advise someone not to go this way is if they're looking for a specialist or a specialty. So in my case, my weakest area of business is in the marketing space. And so I don't really know what the best marketer, how much that person would really charge, because the prices are all over the board.
Well, and the services are all over the board. Like, is it digital marketing? Is it ads? Is it like copywriting? Like, there's so many aspects. So yeah.
Right. So if I'm looking for a specialist, what I tend to do, and if this is not your first hire, by the way, so this is usually your second, third, fourth hire. When I'm looking for a specialist, I'm looking at how quickly can they get me a return. So just this morning with another client that I've recently hired for, she's looking at the marketing person that she brought in. And the marketing person has been with her for 6 months, came back with another proposal and said, to continue, I'm going to increase my rate to, in her case, it was $3,500 a month. And this lady is saying, oh goodness, like, this is so much. Like, I'm really worried about my payroll overall. Like, I was trying to keep it under this budget and this throws me over by $2,000. Like, she's stressed. And I said, you know, the easy answer is she bringing you a return? And in this case, she was like, oh yeah, because of two of her posts, she looked at the numbers. She has brought in $112,000 in the last 3 months that this gal has been here. So I'm like, okay, like, just do the simple math there. If a person can show you their value and return on your investment within 3 months, I think it's a justified cost.
Okay. But how do you measure that? That example too, I mean, even digging to the fact of two social posts equated to this amount of revenue, that's tough to measure. Like what kind of metrics?
Actually, I think marketing is the easiest to measure. I think, you know, people like me are very, very difficult to measure because what I'm doing in an operational aspect, the way I save time and money is really by taking things off of their desk, right?
And peace of mind. It's about like, that's worth something too, but that's so hard to quantify. So I guess, okay, I agree with you. Measuring the ROI to see if the person is valuable to the company aside from just time or money, but how do you put a number on that?
So here's the deal. I use something called key results areas. They're also OKRs in some other people's frameworks. But when you're creating the application, and I've got a hiring plan that I'm going to share with you guys, so you'll be able to see this in there. So once you have the job description done and you have the application done, the next thing you need to do while the applications are coming in, and you know you're going to give them a window of, you know, 7, 5, 10, I don't know, however many days you want to give them. During that time where you're not actively in the hiring process because you're not, you know, you're just waiting for applications to come in, I want you to start thinking about the outcomes of the role. So if you're going to hire a copywriter or a virtual assistant, whatever it may be, it doesn't matter the role, by the way, any role that you bring on, I want you to ask yourself, what does success look like in this role? And what does success look like at 30 days, 60 days, and 90 days? And this is magic and nobody does it, but I promise you, you're going to have the person that joins you is going to be very clear that this is what's expected. And across the board, nobody loves being a leader at this point because it's that really wonky stage of business owner to CEO. It's a hard transition for many of us. And so now that this person knows exactly what they're responsible for, they show up with intention every single day, or at least the days that they're working on your work, on the things that you've assigned to them. So they have direction. They're not going to pull on you as much. And then at the end of 30 days, you can have a knowledgeable conversation with them to assess their performance. How is this going? Did you hit your goal? What does that look like? And so I am a big fan of measure goals at 30, 60, 90. And then you can ask yourself, did they pay for themselves? And if not, what went wrong? And is this really the person for me? Did they really value what you gave them over those 30, 60, 90 days? Or did they really did they half do it?
Okay. I love this. And this leads my mind in two different directions. One, I feel like this 30, 60, 90, like knowing what the goals are really also will lead into the onboarding plan with whomever you hire. Like we have an onboarding plan for our team, but it's so like tactical in terms of, okay, we're getting you on email, we're getting you on Slack and da da da, and here's, you know, training you on these things. But having those goals tied to it makes a whole lot of sense, especially because the second thing I wanted to mention is I really like to do a trial period with anyone new that I'm hiring because sometimes it's just not a good fit. And I want them or me to be able to say, you know what, this isn't working and we can go away like our separate ways without any hurt feelings or anything like that. So I like to do a 30-day trial period. What are your thoughts on trial periods and then onboarding processes as well?
From my point of view, in 30 days, you're really assessing culture fit. You're not really deep enough into the relationship to understand the return on the skill set and the time. So I would extend that to at least 60 days and if not 90 days. And I actually prefer that everybody start with a 90-day trial because you're going to know at day about 45 to 60 if they're going to stay with you or not. So then you can begin the process of replacing them. And it's been very honest because you've only promised them 90 days. And so you're not going to be in a place where you're overlapping with expenses and et cetera. The onboarding piece is huge. If I tell you as a new hire to my business that you are going to be responsible for increasing open rates by 1% over the next 30 days, I really don't have to onboard that person in a very detailed way. Yes, I've got to give them access to, you know, the kind of the list.
Right, the checklist.
Yeah. Like, yes, I've got to give them access to the tools and all of this, that, and the other, and have some conversations about mission, vision, and values, et cetera. That's required. But if I tell them I'm hiring you to increase my open rates by 1%, they get to tell me how they're going to do that. I'm not an expert in it. Otherwise, I wouldn't be hiring for it. So I allow them to fully own it and to document the processes. So it does remove you a little bit from having to highly manage every single day for a long time. Now you could still be in the management scope by having, you know, meet with them for 15 minutes, three times in the first 2 weeks or whatever. Like that's a whole different conversation, but I love the idea of having them be the person who brings in their expertise.
Oh, I love it too. I'm a firm believer in hiring people that are smarter than me in a lot of areas and then having them like teach me and teach my team and helping, like you were saying, our standard operating procedures for things. We are big on workflows and systems and things like that, but I have my team members do them and I have them film Loom videos that we keep in a training folder and Dropbox that everyone can access. Like, I don't know. I definitely want to hire people that are experts in what they do and they improve my business when I let them have the autonomy to do the things they need to do. But to your point, having the specific goals in place of like, this is what my focus is and this is where we're headed. So,
and you don't have to do those goals after those 90 days. It's not like you're going to keep doing 30, 60, 90 day goals. Once you get a handle and you trust them and you feel good about their work product in your business, I think you can back down to like 90 day or even 180 day goals because you're now in a solid relationship where culture and skill set fit perfectly or at least very well. And so you can back down on the management, if you will, and allow them to step into their leaderly place.
And I think too, by then the communication's open, like to your point, the relationship is there. And so, yeah, I love that. Okay. Tell us a little bit more about your hiring plan that you mentioned earlier. What is it and where can people get it?
Yeah, I would love for you guys to go check it out. It's theopsauthority.com/hiringplan, all one word. And so this is the exact same tool I use. People purchase time with me to either help them set up a strategy or they'll have me hire for them because they realize they either don't trust themselves or they realize it's just a big project to manage if they do it correctly. And so in doing this, tons and tons of times in corporate and then on my own here, I have created a plan and a process to be able to execute this over and over and over. And so what I've done is created this plan and shared it with you guys. And so you can pick it up at theopsauthority.com/hiringplan. I think you'll find all the steps there. It shows you the timetable of how long it takes. And PS, we're always looking at 6 weeks to hire, and that's not going to happen if you throw up a Facebook post and say, message me or DM me or write me an email. So if you're not doing this, if you're doing this too quickly, you're going to end up with turnover. So you're going to get a behind the scenes look at the hiring plan, the exact same hiring plan that I use and my team uses to help people hire.
Awesome. I can't wait to go check that out myself. We will include that in the show notes so everybody can head over there and get a copy. So what's next for you, Natalie? Like, what are you working on in 2020? What are your plans?
I'm so excited. So truth be told, Katie and I are really good friends. We've been in a mastermind for a long time. And so they have been pouring into me just as you do in a mastermind. And they have helped me kind of formulate what Natalie 3.0 looks like. I actually think I'm on like 97.0, but whatever.
Stop.
But in 2020, I'm going to be launching an association. So for all small businesses that need operations, which is everybody, but specifically to someone who has a digital footprint, we are going to be opening up an association to help people understanding what their operations are. So looking at the areas like we've talked about, human resources, finances, and project management, those are going to be the three big pillars. And I know that those are the backside of every single person's business. And so I just look forward to helping people in a really financially savvy way be able to stand up their businesses and scale them.
I love it. You are helping so many people with things that they struggle. Like my audience in particular, the reason I got into this is so many of them are artists and they struggle with that business side of things, right? And that's an area I love and I thrive in. And I know the same is true for you too. You have been working with a lot of different entrepreneurs, some very big names, and you're getting in there and solving the problems that they're struggling with. And I just kudos to you, lady, for all the help you give to all of us. And just, you're doing an amazing job. So thank you. Well, aside from that, where can people find you online to read your blog, listen to your podcast and all the things?
Yes, I'd love for you to listen to the podcast. You can find everything at theopsauthority.com and on any social platform, my handle is theopsauthority.
Awesome. Thank you, Natalie, for joining me today.
Thank you.
Hey friends, growing a product-based business can be so lonely, am I right? Especially in this online space where it feels like most programs are geared towards service providers. It has gotten even lonelier lately as so many of us have seen our lives turned upside down by coronavirus. We've had to find new ways to pretty much do everything. And now more than ever, we need community, which is why I started the Proof to Product podcast 3 years ago, to give product-based business owners the ideas and direction and inspiration they were longing for. And my new group, it's a new group coaching program called Proof to Product Labs, really takes it to that next level. Proof to Product Labs was designed for anyone making physical products across all industries. So if you're thinking about diversifying your revenue streams, we've got you covered. If you're implementing new systems in your business, we can help you do that too. If you want to strengthen your marketing, we are all about that. Really, if you want to grow and scale your product-based business, no matter what that looks like, Proof to Product Labs is the perfect place to do it. It doesn't matter what types of products you sell or whether you are just starting out. We'll have something for you every single month that pushes you towards your specific goals. And the best part is that everything you learn in Proof to Product Labs is based on real life experience from real product-based business owners who are practicing what they preach. This means that you will learn from people who are where you want to be at some point in your business. So if you are looking for practical, applicable tools and resources to grow your product-based business, you know what to do. Join us at prooftoproduct.com/labs. You don't have to go it alone, friend. We would love to have you. The doors are open, so join me at prooftoproduct.com/labs. Thanks so much for spending time with us today. Head on over to prooftoproduct.com to join the conversation, access our show notes, and discover free resources to help you build your product-based business. We'll be back next week with a new episode. Thanks again.